You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to A Journey of Transformation Empowerment. You're listening to Antonio T. Smith, Jr., where ideas ignite, change, and possibilities are endless. Before we dive into today's episode, we have something special for our listeners. Today's podcast is brought to you by a groundbreaking book that's reshaping the conversation around Black economic empowerment. It's Resegregation, Volume 1,
The Power Matrix,
a master plan for Black group economics with wealth creation, authored by visionary Antonio T. Smith, Jr. Antonio isn't just an author. He's a former top secret combat special operations intelligence sergeant turned millionaire. His life work championed the economic autonomy and wealth creation within Black communities. In this seminal work, dedicated to teachings of Dr. Claude Anderson, Antonio outlines a comprehensive blueprint covering critical sectors like finance, technology, manufacturing, and more. He blends military discipline with acute understanding of systematic disparity. This isn't just a book. It's a movement, a call to action to create lasting wealth and reshaping the economic narrative. Antonio's vision is clear: drive a significant shift toward Black ownership and control. Listeners, if you've ever wondered about innovative strategies for wealth creation or how technological transformation can uplift the Black communities, then this book is for you. Join Antonio Smith, Jr. on the transformative journey. Pick up your copy of the Resegregation Volume 1, The Power Matrix, today, and be a part of the reshaping future. Now, let's dive into the episode and explore the possibilities that await us.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Secret to Success podcast. Today, I have an amazing guest for each and every one of you. I have Mr. Cody Lowry with us today. How are you doing, Mr. Lowry?
I am doing super duper. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So for those in our audience who do not know who you are and what it is that you do, can you please let our audience know, Mr. Lowry, who you are and all of the amazing things that you do?
all the amazing things. Geez, how can I count the ways? Well, my name is Cody Lowry, and I've been in advertising my whole life. With that said, I've led a pretty eclectic life. And I just published a book. It's Simon & Schuster did the distribution. Postal Publishing published it. And it came out in July 21st. It's getting great reviews. COVID-19 has kind of slowed down some of the personal appearances and public speaking that I have. But let me tell you what it is. And I say eclectic life. You know, I set up a meeting with the President of the United States in 1 week. I was chosen to carry the torch in the Olympic torch relay. I've received a Super Bowl ring from one of NFL's Hall of Fame head coaches. I got a baseball signed by the Pope. And I set up a meeting early on in my career. I did stand-up comedy, and I set up a meeting with the head guy, talent for Saturday Night Live. And what's pretty amazing about that is that I did it in about a day and a half. And, you know, it's a real interesting story. So the book I wrote is Schmooze, What They Should Teach at Harvard Business School. Now, if you don't know what schmooze is, it stems from the Yiddish word schmoozen, which means to chat idly or to chat in a friendly, persuasive manner, especially so as to gain favor in business or connections. And schmooze clearly is that, but in the book, I've redefined schmooze. You know, we live in the most connected society in the history of the world, and yet we are more disconnected now than we've ever been. We're surrounded by the Googles and, you know, the Facebooks and the Instagrams of the world, and they really have got a good hold on us. In fact, they want us to be, you know, every waking moment part of their platforms. And so schmooze is kind of a lost art. And it's not just one thing. It's about, you know, a winning smile. It's about mentoring to people. It's about persistence. And persistence is woven throughout the book. Is my favorite quote is, fall down 7 times, get up 8. And I can tell you this, that I've fallen down a lot of times, right? But you had to get up. It's about being a contrarian. It's about paying compliments. It's about staying relative. It's about being kind. And it's about being kind to all, regardless of class. We are 99.9% more alike than we are different. And I learned that at an early age, and I'll share that with you. It's about laughing at yourself. You know, sometimes we take ourselves too seriously. And, you know, that makes life pretty boring, in my opinion. I encourage people to try to become a master at the podium. And, you know, you look at Warren Buffett. When he was starting out, he was scared to death to get up in front of people. Joel Osteen was the same way, scared to death to get up in front of people. And I can tell you that it has just had a big impact on my life. And I would encourage you, if you, and let me tell you something, it's one of the greatest fears, you know, known to man, right? But I would encourage you, if you're not getting up and you're not speaking in front of people, to, you know, maybe take the Dale Carnegie course or start getting up in front of people. And I can tell you that'll change your life. And for parents out there, encourage your kids to get up. And a lot of times, you know, my dad used to say, hey, you want to see my kid do Elvis Presley? You know, and I'd have to get up. And I didn't want to do Elvis Presley, but I did. And, you know, that kind of stuff. And so it's real important that you get comfortable at the podium. And if you do, and I say kids, your grandkids. I don't know who's on the line, but we might even have people that have grandkids. So I would encourage everybody to get comfortable at the podium. It's about, you know, stepping outside of your comfort zone. For me, it was, you know, somebody bet me that I couldn't run the Marine Corps Marathon. I must tell you that up until that bet, I had only run maybe a mile And that was to graduate high school, you know. And so it's a great story. It's in the book, and you'll learn how this this really slow. In fact, my pace, I found out something about myself that I have what they call deceptive speed. I'm slower than I thought I was, right? And I mean, my jogging is like some people's crawling, right? So it's all of those things. And I mentioned early on that it was, you know, persistence. It's about staying with it. Mm-hmm. It's about never giving up. And may I tell a little story?
Please, go ahead.
Yeah. So I wasn't born with a gold spoon in my mouth, but I do remember us being somewhat comfortable. With that said, my mom and dad moved to Florida when I was quite small from Motown, Detroit, Michigan. And
all
both
right.
my parents became... Say that again?
Oh, no, I was saying, all right.
Yeah, all right. Well, they became alcoholics, and my dad left us, and my mom was, you know, raising the four kids, and within a seven-year period, a seven-mile radius, we moved 32 times. And I remember my mom encouraging us to, you know, stick with it, and there were better times to come for my siblings and I. And so I started selling papers when I was 11 years old. And I used to go to the Sunrise Shopping Center in Fort Lauderdale every day after school, and I would get 15 papers, and I would manage to sell those papers. And then Saturdays I would go. I'd get there around 9 in the morning, and they'd give me 35 papers. One thing I didn't want to do was ever leave without selling all of my papers. So you can imagine how terrified I was one Saturday when the my manager said that he was going to give me 50 papers to sell. Now, I got to tell you, at the time, I thought there's no way I'm going to sell 50 papers. I mean, it was very difficult for me to sell 35. So an extra, you know, 15 papers was, you know, I thought insurmountable. So talk about persistence. I had this little schmooze trick that I used. And if somebody walked by, I'd say, Miami News, sir. Miami News, ma'am. And if they kept walking by, I'd say, sir, would you buy a paper if I told you where you got your shoes, what state you were born in, and how many birthdays mm-hmm. you've had? Well, usually the busiest person in South Florida would turn around and look at you and say, yeah, I'm game. I mean, come on, it was for a nickel, right? And I said, you got your shoes on your feet, you were born in the state of infancy, and you've only had one birthday the day you were born. Well, that day that he gave me 50 papers, I walked and I talked to just about everyone. And some of them I talked twice, right? So I talked to them twice, trying to pitch them for the paper. And it got to be around 6 o'clock. I was dead tired, and I had 12 papers left. And there were two things I could have done. I could have gone over to Nick's Bar, which was a kind of an upscale lounge adjacent to the shopping center, or I could walk across the street to a Jewish delicatessen called Wolfie's. Now, keep in mind, I was selling the Miami News, which was really kind of the second paper in South Florida. The big paper was the Miami Herald. And I was going to go over to Nick's Bar, and I must tell you, Nick was a great guy. He had his PhD in schmooze. And, you know, I'd walk in, he'd say, hey, kid, let me give me those papers. Let's see if we can sell. He didn't even get the name right. Who wants to buy a Miami Herald, you know, what have you. But usually I left that bar with all of my papers sold, you know. Well, I was closer to the Wolfie, so that night I decided to walk across Sunrise Boulevard. I don't know if anybody's from South Florida, but kind of busy street. And I walked across Sunrise Boulevard, my 12 papers, and I got to Wolfie's, and immediately I was really getting nervous. There was a man standing in front of Wolfie's selling the early edition of the Miami Herald. Now, for those of you that are not aware of the Miami Herald, back then it was probably double size of the Sunday New York Times. He had the Miami Herald stacked up to the audience, up to the awning, and they were, you know, they were three stacked all the way up to the awning, and so the smart thing for me would have been to, you know, hightail it back over to Nick's, but I decided that, you know, I'd give it the old college try, right? So anyway, I stood maybe 10 feet from him, and for the next 20 to 30 minutes, everybody that walked out of Wolfie's got an enthusiastic pitch. Miami News, Blue Street Edition. That was the Saturday edition, by the way, and this guy was selling the Sunday Miami Herald. Miami News, man, Miami News, sir. And I was just about ready to hang it up. I was dead tired. About 30 minutes had passed, and I was gathering my stuff, and a guy comes blowing out of the restaurant, and I said, I'm going to give it one last shot. And so I said, sir, Miami News. And he kept walking. I said, would you buy a paper if I told you where you got your shoes, what state you were born in, and how many birthdays you've had? He turned around so abruptly, I thought he was going to hit me. And like most people that had a smile on their face, this guy wasn't smiling. He said, he looked down and in a tone that really didn't match his facial expression, he said, son, how many papers you got left? And I said, I have 12, sir. He said, that's exactly how many I want, and then I want you to go home. So two things that taught me early on at age 11. Number one, obviously, to be persistent. But it planted a seed in me to be kind to all and be kind to the less fortunate. And today, you know, I'm considered the biggest pushover when it comes to, you know, the street people and the homeless and what have you. And, you know, they say, well, you know, they're gonna use that money to buy beer, you know. Well, I've done my research, and I know that about 85% of the people out there are lonely. Many of them are homeless. But you know what? 85% of them are just hungry. And I must tell you, I can't figure out the ones that are conning me and the ones that aren't. And so you'll see that in the book. It's about being kind to all. I can remember not too long ago, my parish priest and my wife and I, we went to Rome, and my wife was sick that day, so Father Coffin and myself, we were taking in the sights of Rome, and as we walked by the Pantheon, I saw something I couldn't believe. There was a man on what looked like a, you know, skateboard with no limbs, no arms, no legs, and he was begging. He had a cup attached to his waist. And I got to tell you,
as the year winds to a close, a new work-life normal is emerging. How we work, where and when we work, and what work we're willing to do have all changed. Here to help break it all down is LinkedIn's Jessie Hempel and her podcast, Hello Monday. Hello Monday is for listeners who are looking to grow their professional lives and take ownership over their careers. Through each episode, listeners will learn they have more agency than ever before when it comes to changing their circumstances. Join Jessie as she talks to luminaries, legends, and listeners about their career journeys and takeaways that you can apply to your own career. If you want more from your professional life, whether it's a career pivot, a promotion, or even a first job, Hello Monday is here to help show you how. Listen and subscribe to Hello Monday with Jessie Hempel on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite pods.
Because he didn't have any arms or legs, that isn't what gave me pause. What gave me pause is that everybody that walked by, even if they gave him, you know, some money, put money in his can, they did so without any human interaction at all. And then most of the people, you know, walk right by him. And so Father and I, we walked up to him, and I said, ciao! And that's an Italian word for hello, and about the only Italian word I knew. And he looked at me, and he lit up like a Christmas tree. And so I was trying to communicate with him as best I could with any Italian I knew. But after about 15 minutes, we had to get on with it, and I put some money in his can, and Father blessed him, and I said ciao again, because that was the only word. It's good for hello, goodbye, whatever. I got about 10 feet away, and I turned around to look at my new friend, and he was smiling at me, and I smiled back. We were both schmoozing, right? And it was a moment I will never forget. And in the book, you'll read about various encounters that I've had about reaching out to people a whole lot less fortunate than the public as a whole. And so that was a that's something that's in the book. The other part that I think in the book that is very important, especially for all of you entrepreneurs, or maybe you're getting into business, or maybe you're struggling in your job. Let me tell you what I've lived by. I've lived by the secret sauce. And before I tell you what the secret sauce is, and if you have a pencil and paper, you might want to write this down. The secret sauce is something that enabled me. I had my own business for 25 years, and then somebody bought me out about 5 years ago, and I'm still president of their retail division. But we have clients on the books, and we've had them for 30 years. There are people on this call who are not 30 years old. Maybe you're 18, 19, 20, whatever. We've had them for 30 years. We've had them for 20 years. We've had clients that is almost unheard of in our industry, because I'm in the advertising business, and I said retail, but I really spend a lot of time in automotive, and I deal with the manufacturers, I deal with groups, and I also deal with what they call tier three. This is the guy around the corner from you that owns the Ford store, the Toyota store, what have you. And these guys are a very, very difficult bunch. And in my world, if you keep a dealer for 5 years, you're doing very, very well, because if they have a bad month, the first thing you want to do is, fire the ad guy, right? So when I tell you that I've had clients on the books for 30 years, and by the way, this one for 30 years, it is an individual dealer. He's located in North Carolina. He has Toyota, Honda, Nissan, what have you. And I started the relationship with his dad, and now he and I are great friends. But let me give you the secret sauce. If you got a pen or pencil with you, write this down. Number one, build relationships. Get the customer to trust you. And I'm going to go over all these. And number three, never, ever, ever let them down. And I'm going to tell you something. When I talk about building relationships, I'm not talking about, spending a year or 2 years building a relationship. When we build relationships with people, ladies and gentlemen, we have to consider that people make a decision on us in the first 30 seconds that they meet us. So when we build relationships, we have to make a good impression. I always tell people, you never get a second chance to make a first impression, and you don't. And I will tell you, this is a great story. I had my own agency and was working it, and I was in Tampa at the time when I got a call from somebody from North Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina, and he was an automobile dealer. And he said, the Toyota dealers are getting together, and we'd love for you to come up and have dinner with us. So I thought that was a great idea. They were staying at the Grove Park Inn, which is a very magnificent venue, and I can remember getting there kind of late, and I walked into the room where they all were, and it was just the dealers, and they had started having hors d'oeuvres and beers and what have you. And then I sat down to dinner, and I was having a good time. I was building relationships with everybody, and I can tell you how to build relationships, but I don't think I've got enough time, but we can maybe on another call. So almost at the end of the evening, and I knew everybody in that room. I knew this guy and the family, that his family and how many kids he had, what college he went to, and his likes, his dislikes. I knew this guy. The same thing. I was collecting data that I might be able to use later, right? And so somebody casually mentioned to me, well, who did you bring with you? And I thought that was an odd question. Who did I bring with me? And I said, well, I just came by myself. And they said, oh, and they kind of looked at me. And here's what was going on. The next morning, there was a major presentation for their account, a multi-million dollar account. They had invited four agencies, and I was one of the agencies. Although I got some misinformation, and I ended up showing up by myself, right? I didn't have a big media person with me. I didn't have the creative team with me. I had no storyboards. I had no parting gifts. Parting gifts sometimes in pitches you give the prospective clients, you know, little takeaway gifts. I mean, I had nothing. I had nothing but myself, and I had something that the rest of them didn't have. I had an opportunity to get to know them, to build a relationship in about 2 or 3 hours. So the next morning, it was pretty scary. I mean, I actually thought about that night. I actually thought about, you know, just, you know, letting them know that I was not comfortable with this. And, you know, all I had was a VHS tape. And I don't know anybody remember. If you're 18 or 19, you probably don't know what a VHS tape was. But in any event, I didn't have anything. I mean, I knew media, but I didn't know the Charlotte market. I knew our creative strategy, but I didn't have any storyboards with new creative. And, you know, all I had basically was myself, right? And so the next morning, you know, I'm meeting the rest of the agency people, and, I mean, they're looking at me like I'm nuts. You know, I'm like a one-man band, and they've got, you know, 3 or 4 people with them. And, you know, they've got all the things that you would expect that they would have. So I was the last one to go on. And if there's anybody there listening in advertising, you know, that's a good place to be the last one. So they went through one agency, two agencies. They got through the agencies, and I was next. And I walked into that room, and you would have thought that I was at a school reunion or something. Cody, hey, how you doing, man? That was fun last night. Hey, great time, Cody. Hey, I like that story. And now, I mean, I felt so comfortable because I had an opportunity to actually build a relationship with these people. So here is the first good news. The first good news is after all the presentations were done, they walked out into the lobby, and one of the gentlemen, I won't mention his name, but anyway, he said, Cody, we'd like to see you in the meeting room. And I walked in, and they closed the door, and they said, congratulations, and they all applauded. I couldn't believe it. But when I look back on it, the reason that I got that account is because I was building relationships, and I was building them early, and that's what you have to do. With the secret sauce when you're building that relationship. Let me just tell you a little tidbit that was really awesome. That particular account changed my life. We got that account, we picked it up, and the next thing you know, the market share goes from like 6.8 to 10 or 11 or whatever, and now I'm getting calls. Hey, will you go to Columbia? Will you go here? Will you go there? About 2 years went by, and you know, we had 7 or 8 Toyota associations, which was really, really, really good business. So you build the relationship. You get the customer to trust you. Now, I must tell you, there is nothing more important than trust. I won't get into it today, but I talk a lot about your own personal brand. You know, you got Amazon and you got Coca-Cola and they all have their business brands. Coca-Cola, incidentally, in 2018, they did $35 billion in sales, but their brand was worth about $68 billion. So when I talk about building your brand and building trust, there's nothing more important than that. I have account executives that that work for me and have worked with me over the years. And I will admit to all of you right now, if you promise not to tell anybody, I'm not perfect. And our agency does make mistakes on occasion. And I can't tell you how many times I had an account executive, a media person, a creative person, whatever, come in and said, oh, God, we screwed up. Oh, we might lose the account. We did this, blah, 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 blah. What should we do? I said, you call the account and you tell them the truth. Well, what if we just say that? No, that's not how it goes, okay? That's not how you keep accounts. There are no little white lies in life. And if you want to aspire to that kind of a way of doing business, then I promise you, you know, you're not going to end up with clients that you've had for 30 years. So you have to get the customer to trust you. And trust doesn't happen in the first, 30 seconds. It does happen over a period of time. And then never let them down. Never let them down. Never, ever, ever let them down. And in my arena, never letting them down was teaching my people, and I used to teach and preach it, that we have to give Ritz-Carlton service, service over and above what they would expect. So if they call at 7 o'clock at night.
I am determined to be rich.
The middle class is not for me.
I need news that cares about me.
And not news that's going to scare me or make me mad at another people group.
I need news without politics.
And I want news that will point me to the money.
This is the news where it happens.
The moments that change the world.
These are the stories we need.
The info that we care about.
We only give you news
that puts money in your pocket.
And the news
that gives us an advantage.
This is the work that continues.
Who we are today.
And what we can become.
Tomorrow.
That's it.
This is where news without agendas can lead us.
Your wealth matters.
This is why more perspectives
make us stronger.
And how our mission can inspire
tomorrow.
This is journalism that helps the world we live in.
This
is
Mexit News.
And everybody has their cell phones, right? You pick up the phone and you find out what it is. On Sundays, we have clients that have issues, or they just want, they want their blankie. And I have a few of those. They just want to talk. And they want to strategize about whatever. And I can look down and I can say, oh, boy, this is going to be a 5-minute, oh, my God, this is like 30 minutes on a Sunday. I pick up the phone and I talk to him because there's a reason that he reached out to me, and it's because he trusts me. And so it's something that I cover in the book, and I think it's something everybody ought to look at. And even if you don't buy the book, maybe you can you took good notes and you can, get a good lesson from that. In the book, I talk about having fun. If you go to Amazon or books online and people that have reviewed it, they've got little catchphrases. Well, it's inspirational, his book. It's educational, it's self-help. And then they always put in humorous. And it is kind of a humorous book. And I can tell you that I have I've gone through life, and I wake up every morning and I have fun. And it's something that if you got your chin in your chest, I would suggest that you kind of think about, approaching life a little bit differently. I can remember one Christmas party that a client had at a great big place in Orlando. It's called the Citrus Club, and it's on top of this big building, and it's kind of a formal place. And the maitre d' came up to, he was an automobile dealer, by the way. He came up to the dealer, and he said, hey, we're going to have to cut him off. And that was funny, and it was funny for a lot of reasons, not the least of which I hadn't had the first drink yet. So I was having fun and having a good time, and I would encourage you to do just that. I was kind of born with a lampshade on my head, and I know everybody wasn't, but, you know, life is short, and if you live to be 100, you want to have fun in life, and I can tell you, when I go through airports, I'll bark, whoop, whoop, and people don't know, you know, that they'll turn around and look, and then I will engage various people and have fun with them, and, you know, that's what I like to do, and I can tell you, that's where schmoozing, you have fun with people, the schmoozing really helps. I can't tell you how many times now, not since March, and I was just up in Chicago, but I haven't been flying like I did. I used to fly almost 200 segments a year, so I was always in the airport. And I can tell you that on numerous occasions, because they got to know me pretty good, the people at the front desk, they'd say, Cody, come here. And I'd turn in my coach ticket, and they would hand me a first class ticket, or free drinks, or what have you. The reason that you know, I think I was the beneficiary of those kinds of things is because I engaged them. Number one, I reached out to them, I was interested in them, and I was fun to talk to. Okay, so do you know how to tell a joke? Find a joke that you know. You like and you think is funny and learn the joke. Nothing is worse, at least for me. And we've got a guy at the club. When I see him coming, I try to turn the other way because I know he's going to tell me a joke, and I know that he only knows about half of that joke, and he's going to start that joke over two or three times. And but sometimes I can't get out of his way, and he engages me, and I sit there and I smile and I take it all in. But you know, learn how to tell a joke, have fun, and then, you know, learn to laugh at yourself a little bit. Sometimes we take ourselves too seriously. I can remember probably about 20 years ago. I've got three kids, Cody, Chelsea, and Kip, and they were they're all about a year apart, right? And so I remember coming home from work, and it was late, and they were downstairs, and you know, I was upstairs, and my wife and I had just bought a brand new green suede couch, and I love this green suede couch. I mean, I really thought I wouldn't buy the thing today, but back then I thought I had arrived, you know. And I walked in, and I walked up to the couch, and there was a big stain in the middle of the couch, mm-hmm. and I went, oh, my God. And immediately, Cody, Chelsea, Kip, get up here right now. By God, I was going to find out where that stain came from, right? So up mm-hmm. they came, Cody, Chelsea, and Kip, Cody being the oldest. And I said, I want to know who did it. I want to know now, and I want the truth. And my son, Cody Jr., looks at me, and he said, Dad, you can't handle the truth. And I gotta tell you, to this day, I laugh at that. And you know what I forgot to do? I tell this story in the book, and I guess I left some people hanging because in one of the reviews they said, how did it happen? And I never really tell you. So now you're going to know something that people that read the book don't know. We had a young man that lived behind our house. It was a friend of my boy's. And from what I understand, he drank a couple beers really quick, and he spilled his personal whatever all over the couch. And so that's what happened. No. And, you know, a nice guy. But I've been talking a lot. Do you have some questions for me?
You have actually been answering. If our audience was paying attention, you have actually given us a lot of nuggets, and I'm enjoying the knowledge that you're giving us. You know, build relationships, get the customer to trust you, never let them down, have fun, learn to laugh at yourself, and just all in all, just be, from what I'm getting from you, Mr. Lowry, just all in all, just be a good person.
Yep.
You know, if you're a good person, it will lead you to your success. It will lead you to your prosperity.
Well, absolutely, and you've got You know, when you go through life, and as I said, life is short, so you got to make the most of it, and you know, you gotta reach out to the less fortunate. You gotta be kind. You gotta smile. You gotta mentor. My mentor was Hugh Hoffman, and I don't know if you have a mentor or you're mentoring to somebody, but I've done both, and one of them got me an opportunity to carry the torch in the Olympics. But another mentor that I had, you know, like I said, I was raised without a father. So we had a gentleman by the name of Hugh Hoffman. And my younger brother actually met him first. And he had a tax accounting business in Fort Lauderdale. And, he, you know, in the Reader's Digest, they used to have a section called The Most Unforgettable Character. And I thought, you know, someday I might just write the Reader's Digest and tell them about Hugh Hoffman. So he was a guy, like I said, he had his own company, and he had what my brother and I called Hoffmanisms, words of advice. He said, "Cody, you never lend money to a friend. It's the quickest way to lose one." Well, I can tell you, I haven't. Over the years, I've lent money to friends, and sometimes it hasn't worked out so well. But in any event, you know, he said, "If somebody initiates the bet, don't take it." He says, "When I have the cleaning people come in to clean up the office, I hide money in the seats." Tells me two things: one, if they clean there; two, if they're honest. You know, and he had all of these Hoffmanisms, and he was just a wonderful guy. He would never ever, based upon that advice, he would never lend you any money. I can remember for homecoming, I need to make some money, so I went over to his house and I asked him if he had anything I could do, and he thought. He finally said, "Well, mow the lawn." And I said, "Hugh," and that's what we called him, my brother, and I said, "Hugh, somebody's already mowed the lawn." He said, "Well, then mow it again." And, you know, and so that's the kind of guy he was. But, you know, I talk about having fun. This is where here's an example of that. Remember, he said, "If somebody initiates the bet, don't take it." So I remember I went over to his office, and he came out. He said, "Cody," he says, "I'll bet you $1 that you can't find the horn on my new Cadillac." He bought a new Cadillac every year, you know. And he says, "And let me tell you something. Five people have already lost the day." Well, remembering what the advice he had given me a year prior, I said to him, "Well, you know, I don't think I'm interested in that." He went back into his office. So when he went back into his office, I went out to the front waiting area, and I called Connor Brown Cadillac, the only Cadillac store in town. And I got a salesman on the phone. I said, "Hey, listen," I said, "where is the horn on the new Cadillac?" He says, "Oh, all you do is squeeze the steering wheel." I said, "Really? Okay." So now out comes Hoffman, right? He's a big guy. He looks like Paul Bunyan. He's a big head, big hand, big feet, and, you know, somewhat awkward in his own skin, right? And so I said, "Now, Hugh, what was this again about the horn or something?" He said, "Cody, listen, I'll bet you $1. Let me tell you." And he reminded me again, "I'll bet you $1 and five people have already lost that you can't find the horn, and I'll give you 1 minute. And I said, "You're on," just like that. He jumped back, and we went outside. It was the funniest thing. I got in the car, had power windows, put the window down. We turned the engine on, and he's standing over me with his watch, and he's looking at his watch. You would have thought this was a shuttle launch or something. He said, don't go. I'll tell you. All right. 1, 2, 3, go. And I squeeze. He goes, "Son of a, you know what?" And he goes, I can't believe it. He says, "I should have known." He says, you're a smart guy and blah, blah, blah. I didn't tell him right then, but about a year later, I told him, and he thought it was great fun. But he was a great mentor, and I look back at my life some of the ways that he was so successful. He had in Fort Lauderdale, he had Religious Vacations Inc., And he had like, I don't know, maybe six homes in Fort Lauderdale that he used to keep up. And preachers, remember Fort Lauderdale, they would come down and book a vacation at one of these houses. And so he, you know, I really learned a lot from this guy and a lot about business and really a lot about persistence. But I'm going to maybe finish up here with a story about mentoring, because I think it's a good one, and I hope your audience out there really thinks about mentoring to a young person. I know young person or maybe somebody that is really needs a little a little help in life. So I was doing work for Chevrolet Motor Division, and the gentleman that at the time that I met him, he was the zone manager. So he handled all the Chevrolet dealers in the Southeast, and we became friends. And then he was moved to Detroit, and he became general marketing manager for Chevrolet, and doing some really creative kinds of ads. And he called me one day and he said, "Cody, I was wondering if you could, spend some time with my son." And his son had just graduated from college. I say just graduated, maybe 2 or 3 months. And he was having a hard time finding a job in his position. And he says, "You know, a lot of people in Tampa, and maybe you can, you know, network with them and help them out." So, you know, I met with his son. We met like maybe 3 weeks. We'd meet on a Tuesday or whatever it was. But we'd meet once a week. And I got a call from him. He said, "Cody, can I come over?" He says, "I got a job." And I thought, wow. So he comes over, and he's all excited. And he tells me his job. I said, "Well, where did you get it?" And he says, "Well, I'm going to be account executive at blah, blah, blah agency." I don't want to name the agency. And I looked at him, and that blah, blah agency represented Chevrolet Motor Division, right? They did the iconic ads, you know, Heartbeat of America, baseball, hot dogs, apple pies, and Chevrolet, Like a Rock, you know, just incredible, creative. And I said, "Well, why are you doing that?" And I said, "That's not what you want to do." He said, "I'm just tired. I'm working at TGF Fridays, and I'm just tired of cooking hamburgers, and I just want to get on with my life." And I looked at him, and I said, "Don't take it." I said, "Your dad is in a position. If he wants to get you that job tomorrow, the next day, next year, all he's got to do is pick up that phone, and guess what? You'll be an account executive at this ad agency." And I encouraged him to stick with it. And he agreed, and about a week later, I get a call, and he got his dream job in South Florida. And that led to a deeper relationship, that mentoring, so much so that all of a sudden, you know, I'm getting invited to weddings and, you know, all kinds of things. And then one day I get a call from this gentleman from Detroit, and he had nominated me to carry the torch in the Olympics. And that is an incredible honor. And Magic Johnson, they just had I don't know if you had an opportunity to see it, but they kind of did a little bio on his life, and he's in his house, and he walks over to this plaque. He said, this is something that I will cherish for the rest of my life. And on the plaque that he has is a torch with the Olympic, you know, the Olympic torch. And it's really something that's very nice. And the reason I know it's nice is I have one too. And, you know, I wasn't a basketball all-star and, you know, won all the awards and what have you. But what I did do is I mentored. And I tell people there's spoils to schmoozing. You know, you get paid back. And the reason I have an NFL Super Bowl ring is because I reached out to a guy that became a very good friend of mine. His name is Hank Stram. You can look him up. He was in the first Super Bowl and the fourth Super Bowl, and we became friends. I did commercials with him and, you know, all kinds of things. And one night we were having dinner, and I always worried about this guy, wondering if he was doing okay, because he was, you know, if and I'm going to tell your people, do yourself a favor. Go online and look at, say, Hank Stram NFL Films. He was the first guy that they ever wired up for NFL Films, and they asked him to do it. Number one is he never said a cuss word in his life, right? And so they wired him up, and it's an iconic piece of work, a film. And so anyway, we became friends, and I'm thinking maybe about 8 years into the relationship, I'm having dinner, and he's talking about this new deal that somebody was gonna, you know, get him involved with, and I'm thinking, oh, here we go again. He's got another deal he's chasing after, and I don't know. I just wanted to make sure he was all right. And I said, Coach, can I ask you a question? And he said, yeah. And I said, are you doing okay financially? Well, he laughed. He thought that was so funny, you know, and he thought it was funny on a couple of fronts. Number one, he was head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs, and Lamar Hunt, many, many people out there will know that name, multi-billionaire, set him up pretty good. And then he did TV color for CBS. So he was on air with another guy named Jack Buck. In fact, you know, when they had the CBS games at night, sometimes he'd call me at halftime. Cody, you know, good rat. How you doing, boy? I said, what are you doing calling? How do you think I'm doing? And, you know, a lot of times these people that are very, very successful and they have star power, they also have a little side to them that's somewhat insecure. But I had no desire to have a Super Bowl ring. I never thought about asking him for one. But that night, he realized that I cared. And when people know that you really care about them, you know, you've given them a gift that $1 million would replace. In the next breath, he says to me, he said, Cody, I'm going to make a big man out of you. And I said, well, how are you going to do that, Coach? And he said, how would you like a Super Bowl ring? And I went, what? A Super Bowl ring? And bottom line is, he had a Super Bowl ring made for me. The company that made the ring had to call the owner, Lamar Hunt, to get permission to make the ring because they're very protective of these things. And I believe Coach said that he was getting one made for his son or something. But, you know, so the spoils of schmoozing, there's benefits to you know, being kind and reaching out to people and then showing people that you have heart. And I'd kind of like to finish up with something that I think is pretty important. And it's about being appreciative of what we have. Sometimes, you know, we go, whoa, it's me, and we put our chin in the chest, and, you know, and there's people on this listening now that I know have had it pretty rough starting out. I think your host had it pretty rough starting out, and I had it pretty rough starting out. You know, when you, within a 7-mile period, a 7-mile radius, you move 32 times. I mean, it's a wonder you got any kind of a future at all. But I think as bad as it gets, that we've really got to appreciate. We've got to appreciate, you know, the things that we have in life. And mm-hmm. I always tell people that, you know, if they don't have a dime in their pocket, they have it better than 99.9% of all the people that have ever lived on the face of this earth. And I actually do believe that. So there's a poem, and it's in the book. And if you'll indulge me, I'd like to just read it. It's not very long, but I think it drives home my point. Appreciate everything. Appreciate it when you go out on the street and the light is green. Appreciate it when somebody gives you a small candy. Appreciate every compliment you receive. Appreciate the love that people give you. Appreciate every breath that someone takes before they tell you something because they took it for you. Appreciate even bad things, because there's no better thing than balance, and balance doesn't exist without bad things. Appreciate your balance. Appreciate your life. Appreciate yourself. Author unknown.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you very
much.
Yes, thank you. Can you please let our audience know where they can go to get your book?
Yes, you can go. You can go online is the best place to get it. Barnes & Noble or Amazon. I think most people use Amazon. It's called Schmooze, What They Should Teach at Harvard Business School. And I know that there's some people out there. The gentleman that wrote the foreword is Dr. Nito Quibane. He's president of High Point University and just an unbelievable guy.
Wow.
Any Yankee fans out there, Hal Steinbrenner has endorsed it, Alan Dershowitz. I mean, and it's a great read. It's a fun read. It's called Schmooze, What They Should Teach at Harvard Business School. And you can probably the best place to get it is right online at Amazon.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And if anyone wanted to reach out to you to find out more about you, where can they go to find?
So they can go to MrSchmooze.com. That's my website. And it'll tell you more about, the things that I've done and so on and so forth. And, you know, I'm doing speaking now and what have you. I've got a Thursday I'm doing some. I've never done one of these. It's a virtual speech. It's a keynote for a company out of Chicago. And I'm looking forward to it, but it's something new to me. But so we'll see how that goes. So, yeah, it's MrSchmooze.com. And then if you Google me, Cody Lowry, I mean, all kinds of stuff come up, several pages. And get a book. You want me to sign it? I'd be happy to.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Lowry, for joining us today for the Secret to Success podcast. And I'm going to let you leave the final word with our audience today. So it's on you. What would the final words be for our audience today?
Remember, schmooze. It's about going through life with a good bedside manner.
All right. Well, thank you again, Mr. Lowry, so much for joining us today.
And you have to do me a favor. You have to do me a favor. The next time we talk, call me Cody.
Yes, sir, Cody.
Not Mr. Lowry.
Wow. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you so much for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen, I really hope you purchased the book, Learn How to Schmooze. Thank you so much, Cody, for joining us today. And from the words of our founder and CEO, you can plant better, you can dominate.
When the pandemic began, I had the biggest problem in the world. Not making money. The pandemic was actually quite a blessing for me, as it almost made me a billionaire. I came really close. So the pandemic was a blessing. It was hiring people. And get this, everybody. I had 48 job positions open during the pandemic. $22 an hour with paid training. And I could not find a single person for 2 years to fit any of those 48 job positions. Hear me well. 48 job positions. $22 an hour. Paid training. And I couldn't find someone, not one person, for those job positions. Now, is it because I hire slowly? True. But it's because I wasn't using ZipRecruiter. And that's a fact. I wasn't getting to the right people for the right position to fit my right culture. And there are so many different things that you can do this summer. As a matter of fact, you can free up as much time as you want to. But if you're not using ZipRecruiter, you're probably not going to free up that time if you're attempting to hire people. So what is ZipRecruiter? What is probably the greatest job finder that's out there? And that's why you need ZipRecruiter. You need it so you can find the right candidates. Now, it's not that ZipRecruiter helps you find jobs. It's more accurately that ZipRecruiter takes your culture, takes your job, takes what you're looking for, and immediately matches them with the perfect candidate. And if they can't find a perfect candidate, they would skip over that person and then give you the perfect candidate for you. ZipRecruiter uses one of its most powerful tools, which is the technology itself, to match the right candidates up with your job. You can easily review their recommendations and easily review their recommended candidates and invite these candidates to apply for your top positions. Additionally, ZipRecruiter has a complete suite of tools that makes it easy for you to filter out, review, and rate candidates. 4 out of 5 employees have been used by 4 out of 5 employers on ZipRecruiter. It is a blessing. And no wonder ZipRecruiter is rated #1 hiring site in the world based on G2 satisfaction ratings as of this year, January 1st. My friends, soak up everything I said. It's not an ad. This is a personal testimony of how I found the right people to sit in the right seat on the right bus. Without ZipRecruiter, it wouldn't have been possible. So how do you take advantage of what I'm talking about? Well, you go to ZipRecruiter.com/B2B. All spelled the regular way. That's Zip, Z-I-P, Recruiter, R-E-C-R-U-I-T-E-R, ZipRecruiter.com/B2B. And I promise you, you will be grateful that you did so. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/B2B. It's also in the show notes.